inside my brain, and baby, you know it's obvious. I'm a sucker for you. Say the word and I'll go anywhere blindly. I'm a sucker for you. Yeah. Any road you take, you know that you'll find me. I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things no one knows about you.
Broadcasting live from the Student Union Building on the campus of SUNY New Paltz. The Edge, WFNP, Rosendale. Edge News, bringing you state, national, world, and local news, traffic, sports, weather, entertainment, and much more. This is News on the Edge.
Good evening and welcome to The Edge News for Friday, April 26, 2024. It's time for a little less Mozart and a little more non-stop breaking news from the smooth tunes from the hours of 7 to midnight here on 88.7. I'm Jack Flowers, coming to you live from the SUNY New Paltz campus. Topping tonight's national headlines, a climate activist charged with defacing a sculpture by Edgar Degas at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. last year, was sentenced in federal court on Friday. Joanna Smith, 54, of Brooklyn, New York, got 60 days of prison time out of a possible maximum sentence of 5 years for smearing red and black paint on the case surrounding Degas' Little Dancer, aged 14, on April 27, 2023. The 1881 artwork is on permanent display at the museum. In addition to the prison term, Judge Amy Berman Jackson ordered Smith to serve 24 months of supervised release and 150 hours of community service, of which 10 hours must involve cleaning graffiti. Smith must pay restitution for the damage to the Degas exhibit and is also barred from entering the District of Columbia and all museums and monuments for 2 years. Smith undertook the action with North Carolina-based climate activist Tim Martin. They are members of the climate activist group Declare Emergency. Smith and Martin were taken into custody following an indictment. They were charged with conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States and injury to a National Gallery of Art exhibit. Each charge carries a maximum statutory sentence of 5 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. Popularly known as the Degas Two, Smith and Martin have become celebrities in climate activism circles, with colleagues from other climate groups speaking out publicly against the case. Last June, around 20 members of Extinction Rebellion, NYC, and Rise and Resist protested the charges against Martin and Smith at the Metropolitan Museum in New York. Extinction Rebellion climate activist Lydia Woolley interrupted a Broadway performance last month, yelling, quote, "Don't forget about Joanna Smith, don't forget about Tim Martin, don't forget about the truth tellers. This play doesn't end when you leave the theater." And more than 1,000 people have signed a petition ahead of the sentence hearing, urging Judge Amy Berman Jackson to show leniency on Smith. Penalties against climate protest have been increasing over the past couple years, and not just in the U.S. Last year, for instance, two protesters from the climate activism group Just Stop Oil each received sentences of more than 2.5 years for scaling a bridge over the River Thames in southeast England, causing a public nuisance. Both men ended up serving partial sentences, Morgan released last December and Decker this past February. Moving on, the Federal Communications Commission has restored net neutrality rules that ban content providers from restricting bandwidth to customers. Consumers can look forward to faster, safer, and more reliable internet connections under the promises of newly reinstated government regulations. The Federal Communications Commission voted 3-2 on Thursday to reclassify broadband as a public utility, such as water and electricity, to regulate access to the internet. The move to expand government oversight of internet service providers comes after the COVID-19 pandemic exposed the magnitude of the digital divide, forcing consumers to rely on high-speed internet for school and work, as well as social and health support. The decision effectively restores so-called net neutrality rules that were first introduced during the Obama administration in 2015 and repealed 2 years later under President Trump. Almost 5 years after Elijah McClain died following a police stop in which he was put in a neck hold and injected with powerful sedative ketamine, three of the five Denver area officers and paramedics prosecuted in the black man's death have been convicted. Experts say the convictions would have been unheard of before 2020, when George Floyd's murder sparked a nationwide reckoning over racist policing and death in police custody. Of course, it is important to note no such defunding as called for by the protests has occurred since. At a sentencing hearing Friday, Jeremy Cooper, a former Aurora fire rescue paramedic, faces up to 3 years in prison after he was convicted in December of criminally negligent homicide in McClain's 2019 death. At least 94 people died after they were given sedatives and restrained by police from 2012 through 2021, according to findings by the AP in collaboration with Frontline and the Howard Centers for Investigative Journalism. Now in state headlines, new building safety legislation in response to a partial building collapse in the Bronx last year would require more stringent safety inspections, impose tighter deadlines for landlords to correct violations, and inflict escalating penalties for failing to meet those deadlines. Councilmember Priyana Sanchez of the Bronx announced that the measure, known as the Billingsley Structural Integrity Act, on the steps of City Hall on Thursday morning ahead of a city council hearing on the measure later in the day. She said the bill would work to prevent situations like what happened at the 1915 Billingsley Terrace in December, when a column of corner apartments in the aging seven-story building came pancaking down in the middle of the afternoon. The first comprehensive congestion pricing program in a major U.S. city will begin in New York on June 30th, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority announced on Friday. The plan remains contentious, however, and with months to go before its scheduled rollout, legal and political clashes could still dilute or stop it altogether. A growing number of opponents, including Governor Philip D. Murphy of New Jersey, influential unions, and some elected New York officials, recently ratcheted up their efforts to block it. The program is meant to ease some of the worst traffic in the nation, improve the city's air quality, increase mass transit ridership, and raise money to modernize the city's subway, bus, and commuter rail systems. Congestion pricing tolls are expected to generate $1 billion a year, with the revenue earmarked by law for capital projects, not operating costs. Under the program, most passenger cars will be charged $15 a day to enter a so-called congestion zone below 60th Street in Manhattan. Trucks would pay $24 or $36 depending on their size. Taxi fares would increase by $1.25, and Uber and Lyft fares would raise by $2.50. That's going to be it in national and state news. We're going to go to a quick break in a moment, but first, the Edge Weather Report. After a very mild and pleasant spring week this weekend, we will see some warmer weather, but less consistent sun. Both tomorrow and Sunday are expected to reach into the low 70s with heavy cloud coverage. Tonight, however, will bring the real surprise with temps dropping into the mid-30s. These extreme fluctuations will be seen into early next week, so make sure you add an extra layer just in case when heading out on your weekend hike or a night out on the town. Don't go reaching for that dial. I'll be back with some Oracle headlines in just a moment. Your Edge News time is 7:08.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-YAR.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Woohoo! All right!
What is it?
I got into state.
Yes! What's the other letter?
Oh, no!
If you're a young man and fail to register with Selective Service within 30 days of your 18th birthday, you will not be eligible for financial aid.
No.
To register, visit SSS.gov on your computer or smartphone. It's quick, it's easy, and it's the law.
Welcome back. We'll be moving closer to home now as we feature a number of articles from New Paltz's own Oracle Reporters. The following stories were reported by Katie Onderis, Sarah Valla, Leela DeMarco, Cassidy Brock, Alyssa Scarone, and Alyssa Scarone, excuse me. Find the full articles online at oracle.newpaltz.edu or pick up a physical newspaper around campus. After an 11-month-long investigation, New York State Attorney General Letitia James convicted 12 defendants in a recently busted Hudson Valley drug trafficking ring. At the center of the drug ring was 41-year-old New Paltz resident Christopher Pulichin. Pulichin was charged with 20 individual charges. He made a plea deal in December of 2022 to reduce what could have been a life sentence to 10 years in state prison, followed by 5 years of probation. The other 11 members of the ring were convicted of varying counts of conspiracy, criminal possession of a weapon, and the criminal sale and possession of controlled substances. All pleaded guilty. Police busted the ring in June 2022 after discovering 11 kilograms of cocaine and over 20,000 kilograms of heroin and methamphetamine pills, worth a total of $1.3 million, as well as 39 firearms and $120,000 in cash. It was the biggest drug bust in Ulster County history. The ring has been a prominent for a long time, according to Ulster County Sheriff Juan Figueroa. In more local New Paltz news, on April 10th at the bi-weekly board meeting, the New Paltz trustees voted in favor of a resolution to urge Governor Kathy Hochul to oppose the Iroquois pipeline expansion. Drafted by Deputy Mayor Alexandria Rochick, the resolution directly addresses the environmental risks of an increase in fracked gas that the pipeline expansion poses, specifically the compression systems that the company, Iroquois Gas Transmission System LP, have proposed in Athens, New York, Dover, New York, Brookfield, Connecticut, and Milford, Connecticut. The resolution also declares the expansion to be in direct violation of New York State's Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, or CLCPA. The act, signed into law in 2019, outlines New York goals to reduce statewide greenhouse gas emissions by 85% by 2050 and establish net zero emissions in all sectors of the economy. Moving on. On April 4th, at the local town council meeting, New Paltz town supervisor Neil Betez announced his resignation from the town supervisor position with a year and a half still remaining in his term. He'll be leaving the office to work as the Climate Resilience Program Manager at the Hudson River Estuary Program at the State Department of Environmental Conservation, where he will work to implement solutions to climate adaptation at both the local and state levels. His resignation is expected to be effective May 3rd, and the town of New Paltz has begun the process of searching for a new town supervisor. Due to the nature of the election cycle, the individual to fill Betez's role will be appointed by the New Paltz Town Council when Betez officially leaves the office. They will be appointed as the interim supervisor, meaning they will hold the position only temporarily until November when general elections take place. Voters will then be able to elect their candidate of choice, and the elected candidate will serve until the end of what would have been Patez's term in 2025. However, due to the fact that Patez's resignation is late in the election cycle, the candidates made available on the ballot will be selected by the New Paltz Democratic Committee rather than a public primary. And now in campus news. On the weekend of April 13th and 14th, SUNY New Paltz's Miami Theater Players lit up the Julian Studley Theater with their show-stopping production of Sweet Charity. Their opening show was on Saturday at 2 p.m., followed by a 7 p.m. show. For their closing night, held on Sunday at 7 p.m., second-year journalism major Patrick Kelly and director of the Miami Theater Players gave a heartwarming farewell speech to the graduating fourth-year cast members. The romantic yet comical musical is set in 1960s New York City. Protagonist Charity Hope Valentine exemplifies this universal yet internalized longing, feeling to be desired, loved, or to be simply considered worthy. Third-year history and political science double major Giovanna Phipps portrayed a Charity, the leader of the Fandango Ballroom, who just wants to be loved. The dance hall ladies work for hire, but considering Charity is the leader of the pack, they work together day in and day out, forming bonds that extend beyond the ballroom. Initially, the Miami Theater Players were set to put on a production of Chicago, but they were afflicted with a difficult situation, playwrights, that being the rights to put on the play. Thus, the club only had so much time to figure out another plan. Sweet Charity, one representative said, had a really short turnaround to put on the show, but we still managed to do it and do it well, end quote. Finally, SUNY New Paltz rugby team has hosted their first annual Raymond Rattray Memorial Tournament on April 20th. The Hawks held the tournament on the New Paltz rugby field and faced off against Molloy University, who ultimately won the trophy. The tournament was initially scheduled earlier this semester before Raymond Rattray's death on January 23rd. New Paltz was originally supposed to play against Molloy University and Bard College. However, Bard was unable to attend due to a lack of players available this past weekend, and they are in the process for preparing for another tournament. After Rattray's passing, his team wanted to honor his memory. Team captain and third-year scrum half Caleb Persanis came up with the idea to dedicate a tournament to him that would become an annual event. Quote, "We went about contacting Ray's family and getting things ready for a tradition," said Persanis. Adding, quote, "We got a trophy to award, a ball to give Ray's family, invited the Student Association and others from the school, and then invited Ray's family to present the trophy. Ray's aunt and cousin ended up coming to support us." When the day of the tournament came and the sun came out after a night of rain, over 70 people came out and trekked across the muddy field to show their support. New Paltz's rugby's A and B team took to the field to play Molloy. The Hawks started off strong in the first game, with the A team bringing home a score of 33-17. Coming off the field, the teams each gathered in their respective huddles, discussing the game and planning for the next. New Paltz even ended each break throughout the tournament chanting Raymond. The second game was just for fun, with the A team versus the B team, also known as Raymond's Raiders, and coach Joel Venables joining in. The Raiders put up a good fight against their fellow Hawks, winning 12-10, surprising those on the sidelines. We're going to head to a quick break before returning with a feature on the most recent news out of Palestine and a look at the past week's student protests, both around the nation and at New Paltz. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to shout out all those on the Oracle staff graduating this May, including Arts and Entertainment Director and longtime WFNP DJ and Music Director Gabby Gagliano, Copy Editor Sam Salerno, the two-year editor-in-chief Zoe Woolrich, and New Paltz's, WFNP The Edge's News own Kenny Nohavica. Stay tuned. Your Edge News time is 7:19.
There's a monster under my bed.
For a child with asthma, monsters are everywhere.
There's a monster in my bathtub.
Something as innocent as a teddy bear or a bath toy could trigger their next asthma attack. Here are ways to help. freezing stuffed animals to kill dust mites, drying bath toys to prevent mold. Learn how to end your child's asthma attacks at noattacks.org or call 866-NO-ATTACKS because their next breath is in your hands. Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is how we do every day. We be grinding. And if you want to come and text us,
if you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. In Gaza, medics and civil defense workers are still recovering bodies from mass graves found at the Nasser Medical Complex for the sixth day in a row following Israel's siege on the hospital. Over 320 bodies have so far been discovered, including women, children, patients, and medical staff, according to Al Jazeera. Another mass grave with up to 400 bodies was discovered weeks earlier at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Civil defense officials have said bodies were found stacked together and shown indications of field executions or being buried alive. Medical materials were also found, including catheters, still within the bodies. The United Nations and European Union have called for an independent probe into the mass graves, and the White House on Wednesday also called for an investigation. Of course, such investigations have been called for consistently since 2014, with no real results occurring. This comes as Israel continues its bombardment of Gaza, with at least 43 people killed over the last 24 hours, that number coming from yesterday, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. At least five of them were killed in the southern city of Rafah, where Israel has conducted near-daily airstrikes as it prepares for an offensive in the city. A spokesperson for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government told Reuters Israel is moving ahead with a ground operation in Rafah, but gave no timeline. An unnamed Israeli defense official said Israel had brought 40,000 tents, each able to hold between 10 and 12 people, to house Palestinians evacuated from Rafah ahead of its assault on the city. It is expected these citizens will be pushed to Khan Yunis, a city almost completely destroyed. Israel news outlets reports Israel will forcibly evacuate civilians to the nearby city. Over 1.3 million Palestinians are seeking shelter in Rafah, the southernmost city in Gaza. The level of destruction and complete roadblocking of any attempt to prevent further devastation by international powers, most prominently in the United States, as it has continued stonewall efforts within the United Nations and other international agencies, has led to a new report from Amnesty International stating international law is at a collapsing point worldwide. The head of the organization has said, quote, "We know now that there is at least 30,000 people who have been killed within Gaza. 70% of the infrastructure has been destroyed. I'm talking civilian infrastructure, schools, hospitals, cemeteries, cultural institutions. We know there's been the highest number of journalists killed in any conflict, then the highest number of humanitarian workers killed in any conflict. We know that famine is being used as a weapon of war. We know that collective punishment has been waged against the Palestinian people, and we also know of clear evidence of extrajudicial killings, as highlighted by the discovery of these recent mass graves, that are coming on top of all the detentions and use of torture and ill treatment over the last few years." Adding, quote, "This is why Amnesty International is concluding that the international system is on the brink of collapse right now. International law is not just violated. People who are violating international law are justifying their violations. And that means they are pretending that international law either has no meaning or does not apply to them. But whatever intention they have, the outcome is the emptying out of international law emptying out of the Geneva Convention, that was supposed to regulate war. In a flagrant disregard for international standards and law, the United States has instead continued to support such devastation, most recently this past Wednesday, as President Biden signed a bill giving $26 billion to Israel for their continuing advances within Gaza. Stateside, this past week has seen the eruption of student-led protests against the ongoing genocide across the country, brutal police crackdowns and escalating rhetoric from politicians and government agencies, including the White House, has spurred the spread of these protests. Nationwide, over 500 people have been arrested on college campuses, including faculty and journalists, as student-led protests have swept the country. Just over the past day, new Gaza solidarity encampments and protests formed at Northwestern, Cornell, George Washington University, CUNY, UCLA, and among others, with major incidents of police violence occurring at University of Austin and Emory University in Atlanta. New Paltz also saw one such protest this past week when, on April 24th at 3 p.m., students from SUNY New Paltz and local organizations gathered to protest the university's ties to Siemens, a multinational technology corporation, calling for disengagement, divestment, and transparency from the university. Siemens is an engineering and manufacturing firm that works with militaries to build the infrastructure of the Israeli state. They're the main contractor for the Eurasia Interconnector, an Israeli EU submarine electricity cable that is planned to connect Israel and its illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory to Europe. Within the SUNY New Paltz 2016 Final Engineering Master Plan Report, Siemens was cited as, quote, continuously monitoring and making improvements to the campus HVAC control system. SUNY New Paltz is projected to fill almost $1 million worth in business contracts with Siemens by 2025. The plans include, quote, building services and, quote, security devices, but lacked further elaboration as to what this specifically means for the campus. On April 21st, at New Paltz Students for Palestine, an unofficial campus organization from whom much of this reporting was done, posted a flyer for their upcoming rally in coordination with SUNY Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, BDS, which targets consumer boycotts. BDS calls for the boycott of Siemens, quote, due to the company's proven record of complicity in the Israeli apartheid. New Paltz Students for Palestine, an unofficial student organization, published an educational guide taking the stance that, quote, SUNY New Paltz is currently contracted with Siemens AG, the largest industrial manufacturer in Europe and a major collaborator of the genocidal apartheid Israeli regime. This protest incorporated a three-point approach to its frame its intentions and actions against BDS consumer boycott target. The first point is disengagement, which involves, quote, committing to severing contracts, withdrawing investments, and ending all financial relationships with companies culpable for genocide in Gaza. This group urges the university to cut their contracts, their two contracts, that would be C991285 and OC42022, which total over $850,000. Secondly, divestment, which demands the university's full commitment to the BDS campaign against ties to Israel in all forms. SUNY New Paltz has not officially expressed a stance against BDS or the subject of SUNY BDS. The third point, and final point, is transparency, asserting that New Paltz, quote, commits to increased transparency and disclosure regarding the school's donations, investments, and contracts. Additionally, the group also demanded that all private dealings between the university and businesses come freely available to the public, both in an online search and in an email sent to all SUNY New Paltz students. At the rally on Wednesday, about 15 minutes into it, campus officials appeared at the boycott. They requested that the protest be moved to the Student Union Concourse, the university's designated public forum space. After the protesters declined to move the concourse, the officials told students that failure to comply with campus policies may result in student conduct charges. In response, protest leaders led the group off campus in a march to Hasbrook Park. Once at the park, the rally was continued and the teach-in began after organized chants and speeches from individuals restating their demands regarding divestment and avowing their boycott. One speaker, who elected to remain anonymous, stated, quote, we are not begging for anything. This is our demand, meaning that the money that flows from this university, from this state, to aid the genocide of Palestinians will stop, and this is not a threat or of further escalation. This is simply a promise and a declaration of truth. End quote. That's going to be it from us today. On a quick personal note, this will be my very last show on The Edge News after roughly 2 years involved with the station and roughly a year and a half as one of our news directors. Just a huge thank you to the entire staff, particularly Val Turco, who is our station advisor and truly the beating heart of our organization.